Hi, and welcome to another episode here of the Disaster Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and we are here in Atlanta, Georgia at the NACHO Preparedness Summit, where we are covering all things to do with preparedness topics in healthcare. And I have my co-host here, Sam Bradley. Sam, a great conference so far and lots of lessons learned.
Especially for me. I thought I've been working in disaster preparedness my whole life and thought I knew a lot until yesterday. And all these experts we sat down with, I mean, I was amazed at what I didn't know, but I do now.
Yeah, it's really a great conference. And if you're involved with preparedness or public health at the county or city level, local level in your system, you're going to want to make sure that you are looking at coming to this conference next year because it's really a great event. We got to sit down with several experts, either Sam or I, and bring them on the show. And Sam, we're going to talk about PODs, which are points of dispensing. Mm-hmm. And just briefly, what are PODs?
PODs are basically if there was a big event where a lot of medication, H1N1 was a similar event, where there needed to be a lot of medications dispensed. There's a process by which people walk in, they get registered, they go through an educational process, there's several steps in it, and then when they get to the end, they get their medication. I'm sure they get medical history in there, and they did a rather interesting thing for lunch. They actually exercised that. When they had people come in for lunch, they went through those stations, just a quick version of it, and I believe what you said, that they ran 250 people through in half an hour, which was really
which what they thought
efficient.
Was really good. And this is including getting some medical history and all these other
exactly.
things that have to happen before you give somebody a medication. You need to do some due diligence. And they went through that process and then distributed lunch at the
yeah,
end
so
of it.
Yeah, so their medicine was their lunch.
Their medicine was their lunch. And great process and really an innovative way to approach training and drills. Is coming up with these unusual and interesting ways to get people used to what the drill is going to look like in real life.
And not only that, but we talked to one of the fellows we talked to was the incident commander, and every time they exercise it, they learn a little bit better about how to make it more efficient.
Yep. So this first segment is PODs, Lessons Learned, mm-hmm. and you sat down with three experts talking about PODs.
We did, and we also talked to a gal that was doing data collection with a brand new app that they're working on that will be available to other areas once they get it refined, and I was pretty impressed with that because data collection is critical in a situation like this.
So let's go to that segment right now.
Mm-hmm. Good afternoon from Atlanta, Georgia, and the Disaster Preparedness Conference. This is Sam Bradley, your host for the Disaster Podcast. And I have a couple guests with me here today, Andy Pickett, Melissa McClung, Melissa McClung. And we're going to talk about PODs. Probably a lot of you don't know what a pod is. Well, we're going to explain it. And I was pretty impressed with what they did for lunch here, is they actually created, and you know, many of us hear about things, but we don't understand them until we can experience them. So what they did for lunch today was created a pod atmosphere for people to go in and get their lunch. So Andy, tell us a little about yourself and then how you came to create this pod.
Well, my name is Andy Pickett, and I'm the Emergency Preparedness Coordinator for the City of Detroit, Michigan. And part of my job is to plan for and be able to set up pods or points of dispensing within the City of Detroit to provide medication to the public in response to a public health emergency. So what we did today was we actually replicated a pod environment here within the exhibit hall and used it, instead of passing out medication, we were able to pass out lunches to, 150 of the conference attendees here.
That was a really good idea. So, Melissa, you're an epidemiologist, and I can actually say that. So what is it you do? You're from Denver, correct?
Yep, my name is Melissa McClung. I'm from Denver Public Health. I'm an epidemiologist there, and I'm also the project manager for a mobile app data collection tool that Denver Public Health has developed for pods such as this. So we were asked to participate in the pod and bring our data collection tool so that we could test it out and get some more experience with it, as well as expose people to the technology that's available.
So tell us a little more about the app and what it does and how it would be functioning in an environment. In a disaster environment?
So we realized through some of the mass clinics that we've held in the past, specifically H1N1, that there's a lot of inefficiencies trying to move people through a mass intervention. So we wanted to develop some sort of mobile intervention data collection tool that would capitalize on some scanning technology in order to scan driver's licenses or other forms of identification, and then rapidly collect standardized electronic data that could then be rapidly pushed to databases or things such as an immunization registry. So it would improve, hopefully, efficiency, taking data from the patient, such as demographic information, and then also, hopefully, really cut down on data entry on the back end as well.
Boy, that sounds exact. There's an app for that. We need an app for everything.
There
so is this something that will be eventually shared with other areas?
We would love for other public health departments or other organizations to use it. It's not as easy as downloading it from the App Store. There's a server and a database that support the app itself, so it kind of comes as a package deal, but we would very much encourage other people to look into it and see if it would work for them.
Well, before we leave you today, make sure we get some information on where they can find that. So, Andy, tell us more. We know a pod is a, explain.
Point of dispensing.
Point of dispensing. Yep. So if there was an emergency today, and I remember this somewhat being in Northern California when we had, as everyone did, the H1N1 issue, and we had some drive-by immunization clinics. So I guess that was a pod of sorts.
Yep. But
if someone were to walk into a pod, what kind of things? Now, I noticed you had all of the different levels of podness there. So what would that look like?
Our pod today had four steps, and most pods will follow some variation of those steps where there is a check-in or registration process, and we were using the Handy app in order to do that, where the client would come in, we'd collect some demographic data from them. Then there would be some sort of an education. We want the clients to know what's going on, what this public health emergency is, what medication they are going to be receiving, how they need to take it, what's going on. We need to make sure that the clients are informed. Then there's going to be some sort of dispensing where we're going to give them that vaccination or provide them with some pills or whatever the medical countermeasure is. And then finally, there's going to be that exit station. Again, we were using the Handy app to check the clients out of the pod when they were done. So, you know, there could be different variations on those steps depending on what jurisdiction you're in and how they set up their pod site. But it's generally going to be some sort of check-in, education, screening, dispensing, and exit.
So those are the basic parts of any pod, basically.
Correct.
So
yep.
Even though you're in different areas and different states, your pod would exist and she'd be collecting data or someone similar would be collecting data, which is really important to know how many people are affected, what kind of issues you're dealing with. And I really like the fact that you're providing some education because this is really scary for people. They don't know what they're getting into. They just hear these big scary stories about bad things out there, and it's really good to know that. So this topic is really about pods, lessons learned. What can you tell us about that?
Well, I think we have learned from previous experience, and that led to the development of this data collection tool. For this pod today, we were a little heavily staffed on the front end, but that's okay. We got people through. Otherwise, I think Andy can probably tell a bit more, but the data collection tool worked really well, I think, and it was easy to learn. We provide just-in-time training, so the night before the pod, we got together and did a quick training on how to use these. We have found in the past that smartphone users in general are a lot more comfortable using it. Those people that don't have a smartphone take a little bit more time just to get comfortable with the app, but otherwise, it's pretty fast.
So if I was going to be one of your data collectors, how long would it take you to train me to use this app?
5 to 10 minutes.
And I have a smartphone.
Yeah, so 5 minutes for you.
That's really good because you're going to need a lot of people probably.
Right.
And
we need people to be able to train them. We use just-in-time training, so yeah.
And, you know, one of the successes of our pod today was we brought in people from all across the nation. We had federal partners, state partners, local partners who were part of our pod staff. And, you know, with an hour-long training last night, we were able to get everybody up to speed on what their roles and responsibilities were going to be in our pod site. And today it moved much better than I think anybody anticipated. We got, like I said, 150 people through in a half an hour, got them lots of education, lots of information, and got them exposed to a pod site.
Well, that's the way it would work. You would depend on a lot of local volunteers, maybe MRC people, you know, that knew something about what was going on, but weren't specifically educated on a specific roles in a pod.
Well, we also use the incident command system. Andy was the incident commander, and so I think there's a lot of people have been trained in that. So even though it brought this pod brought together people that haven't necessarily worked together before, everyone being trained in incident command system, it really helps.
Yeah, ICS is a great framework to work within, and it worked really well today.
Yeah. Well, I work for a fire department, so I know well.
So
about,
you understand
but basically,
it well.
I'm also on a DMAT team and have worked at many different levels, but the one thing that's always consistent is ICS and how I can see how, you know, everybody has that basic understanding, so they know what roles they need to take and how it all works together, so that's excellent. So, Andy, any other lessons learned? I don't know how many times pods have actually been put to use. Maybe you have a better sense of that.
I mean, again, our health agency, we utilized parts of our pod plan during H1N1. We didn't set it up to the scale that we might if there was a bioterrorism event, but we did use our pod plan to respond to H1N1. So I think that for most health jurisdictions, other than exercises, a lot of jurisdictions try to do annual testing and exercising of their pod plans.
Well, that's one thing I was wondering. How often are you able to exercise? That's a large project, especially when to make it work. Like for you, you need large numbers of people going through it in order to see how the data collection works and everything. So then we have a real disaster. And
yeah, I know that our health department uses things like staff retreats or meetings and conferences to try to exercise as much of our pod plans and to do a like simulation a little bit. So we kind of look for opportunities where we might be able to exercise some of the pieces of our pod plan.
Well, this is a good place to do it. Maybe they'll repeat this in the future and you can
I'm
make it a little
so.
Better next time.
Yep.
So, Melissa, tell us where we can find out more about this app. I want to direct people there.
Well, if people participated in the pod today, there's a handy handout actually on the flash drive that we distributed, and I'm happy to have people contact me directly, and I can provide more information. I did blog about Handy for the CDC a couple years ago, so if you do a search, you can probably find that, but I'm happy to be contacted directly.
Good. Well, we'll make sure we put that in the show notes so people know how to contact you, because I'm sure when they hear this, they're going to want to know more about it.
I hope so.
So, Andy, where do we find out more about pods and what you do? And
you know, NACHO actually has a lot of resources for health departments who are doing pod planning. There's also a lot on the CDC in terms of bioterrorism response and what local health departments would be doing. So if you search on their website, you can find some information about what a pod is and how a pod works.
So if you end up in one, you'll know where you are.
Exactly.
Words of wisdom.
So, Sam, that was a pretty interesting topic,
talking
about lessons learned, the data app and data collection and everything that they picked up. But there's different types of pods we found out about.
We did, and I was unaware that there is open pods and there are closed pods. And what I learned was that it makes a much more efficient process, especially for a large city. And we're talking to folks from St. Louis, which is obviously a very large city. So your open pods are where anyone in the public can go. But they also will set up closed pods, for instance, with a large corporation or a large business. So they don't have to worry about their employees leaving to get, they can keep them contained, which works better for everybody.
And they get their medications
Correct.
And their information right from the central location, which for them would be their place of business.
Right, and we talk not only to the city people, but to the company that helps them, because it's a big job. They have companies that will go out and actually talk to these businesses about why they should.
Liaison company that kind of acts as the middleman to help these or corporations understand why the benefits of the closed pod is, and then connect them back to the local public health department.
Right, and that makes perfect sense, because the public health people don't have that kind of time to go out there and talk to everybody that needs to be talked to. So it just works well. We couldn't find anything. It just was a win-win for everybody, basically.
Fantastic. Well, let's take a look at that segment that Sam did yesterday.
Good afternoon again from beautiful Atlanta, Georgia. We're here at the Disaster Preparedness Summit. I've said that so many times I can't say it anymore. And we thank NACHO for letting us be here. We're learning a lot about that organization, and I'm learning a lot about a lot of things. I'm Sam Bradley, your host, and we're talking with some folks here from St. Louis, Missouri, David Reddick, And I hope I pronounce your names right. And Mr. John Anthony. So, David, tell us a little about yourself and what you do in St. Louis.
Sure. I am a co-owner of BioDefense Network, which is a public health consultancy. And I'm very proud to be with my favorite client, John Anthony of St. Louis County.
That worked out well, didn't it?
We began working with St. Louis County about 3 years ago. And I'll be happy to let John talk about the success that the county and BioDefense Network together experienced in our work.
So, John, tell us about what you do in St. Louis.
Sam, I'm the Emergency Preparedness Manager for St. Louis County Department of Health. We contracted with BioDefense Network about 3 years ago, 2011, to help us raise the number of private or closed pods, points of dispensing, that would dispense to the general population in an emergency such as an anthrax attack or something similar along those lines. And at the time we hired them, we only had about 200,000 citizens covered by closed pods, some major corporations, all the hospitals. But we needed to raise that because realistically, any large jurisdiction, their health department can't come up with the manpower to dispense to their entire population. St. Louis County has about 1 million people. And so we needed to lean on the private industries, Enterprise Holdings, Boeing, Centene, to name a few of the 70 that we have signed up. But now we have about 750,000 of our constituents covered by closed pods.
And that's a distinct difference. And now John is able to do a much better job of covering the remaining 250,000 residents by staffing a fewer number of open pods, which makes it doable. And as a resident of St. Louis County, I'm very proud of that because that means that my neighbors and my family will be better protected.
So we know that a pod is a point of dispensing. So if there was an outbreak of something epidemiological, that folks could go there, get checked in, get educated, get medicated, whatever it may take. But help us understand the difference between a closed pod and an open pod.
Well, the open pod is it's run by the health department. It's open to the public. Originally, our plan was to staff 20 high schools. We never had the staff to actually do that, so it was a good plan, but it wasn't feasible. And so it's open to the public. They can come there and get their medication. But the idea with the closed pod is if you're a private entity, a university, or whatever it may be, it really helps us out because we just drop off a large case of antibiotics or whatever the case may be, and they take care of their people. And so those are people that are taken out of our lines, so the St. Louis County government doesn't have to worry about covering them. It's covered by the businesses, and so it's a benefit for the businesses, and it's a nice because you don't have to go to the public pod, maybe stand in line, and you can go to work, pick it up, get it for not only yourself but for your families. It's a no cost option, and it's been very popular.
That makes a lot of sense.
It really streamlines the distribution of these life saving medications. It's essentially outsourcing a lot of the work that John and his staff would have to do to private corporations and universities, civic groups, anybody who wishes to agree to distribute these medications and has a plan to do it can get the medications free of charge and, in John's case, delivered to their facility. So all they have to do is basically ring the bell, tell their employees, come to the pod. When we talk to business continuity professionals and human resource professionals in an effort to persuade them to become a closed pod, I like to say, so if there's an anthrax attack in this community, do you want your employees cowering at home, afraid of for their lives, standing in line with 50,000 of their closest friends and neighbors, or would you like them to come to work? And the answer is generally, we'd like them to come to work. So how can we do that? Well, sign this memo of understanding with St. Louis County and take it from there. So we help facilitate that, and then help train the closed pod host in order to be sure they can do it. And John has done a terrific job, not only of setting it up, but of evaluating these closed pods afterwards by sending somebody out to talk to the people who will be running these closed pods. So he not only has created a network of closed pods, he's created a network of closed pods that we believe will work in a time of crisis. That's a key difference. Not everybody's network of closed pods will really work in a time of crisis. John's will, and I'm very proud of that.
He has a lot of faith there.
Yeah, I'll say. it is. That is a very important element, because all the planning that the health department does once you sign these people up is based on us only having to cover 250,000 people now instead of 1 million people. And if the closed pods fall on their face in an anthrax attack or whatever it may be, you're in very bad shape. And so we do take it very seriously. We keep them engaged. We exercise with them annually, and it keeps them interested. And it's a win-win for both sides.
Well, it makes a lot of sense to me. And you're keeping your people in your own organizations, are not having to go across town to find an open pod. I mean, it just makes a lot of sense on a lot of different levels.
Exactly.
So it doesn't sound like a terribly complex process to become a pod. If I had a business, I just sign an MOU, and certain folks go through the training, and we have to understand how it all works and how to access it, correct?
That's close to it. It's not much more complex than that. John's folks make it fairly simple to sign the MOU, and they do conduct help facilitate the training. So it's not an unconquerable issue, but the problem is that public health departments around the country don't have the time, the ability to sell this to corporations. Say they're doing other things that are equally as important. So we are able to go out and be the obnoxious sales guys who talk to the business, and we do a kickoff with the business and invite questions. And normally the first question is, well, how about liability? And that's taken care of by the PREP Act. So if there's a declared emergency, people who are in good faith distributing life-saving medications are not liable for no legal liability. So the next question is, how much is this going to cost us? And the answer to that is nothing, because a strategic national stockpile is free when it's declared necessary. And then the next question is, why wouldn't we sign this MOU? And we say, do you have a pen? There's no reason you wouldn't. And then maybe a question is, what's the catch? And
yeah,
no
they're
catch.
Looking for the downside.
There's no catch.
Right.
There is
right.
no catch.
There's just the time involved that they have to really figure out how to spin this up and actually do it at their facility. But it is a win-win. And once it has an effect where, you know, once you sign up so many businesses and then you take it to another business and you say, well, look who else is signed up for this, you know, they get on board very quickly.
Well, it makes sense, too, because businesses have disaster plans. This just seems like an extension of a disaster plan, because they're taking care of their own employees. They're taking stress off the city and the county that has to care for any number of other people.
Yeah,
so
right.
It makes perfect sense to me. And what you do, I mean, I see a great synergy right here of how you assess them, and that helps you, and the businesses are happy. It's just...
Right. And they even sell it to their own employees, as this is an added benefit. You know, at no cost to you, if there is A, B, or C incidents, you just come to work. We'll take care of you. And so that's another selling point.
Yeah, and it does encourage those people that they feel safe at work.
Yeah. And there's one more advantage that I like to point out. To many businesses, if they hear that somebody from public health is at their front door, they think, oh, my Lord, what's happened? I'm about to be shut down, or they're going to come down on me for something. And many businesses don't know who their public health officials are. But by becoming a closed pod, these businesses become partners with their public health staff people. Now, John knows a number of people who he probably didn't know before, who are business continuity folks at the community's largest employers. He can call up somebody at Enterprise Holdings or at Express Scripts or a dozen other companies, and they know who he is, he knows who they are, and there's a partnership that's developed there that goes beyond, even beyond, the potential benefits of being a closed pod. So that's another win. So you stack about six wins in a row.
There's nothing but wins here. I don't see any downside to this to anybody, which is hard for people to grasp. But like you said, they're going, okay, what's the downside? You know, and there really isn't any. I mean, it works for all of you.
It does.
That's excellent. Well, I learned a lot about what I didn't know a few minutes ago.
Good. I appreciate that.
So, David, where can they find out more about your company and what you do? Because I'm sure when people hear this, they're going to start.
Well, I hope so. Biodefensenetwork.com.
There you go.
Simple enough. We can help. Just ask.
There you go. And tell us more about where they can find out about what's going on in St. Louis.
They'd be welcome to call me, 314-615-6847, or janthony@stlouisco.com. I'd be happy to talk to them about it. We have a paper that's up for review for publication right now on it, another one in the works. Anybody can call me or send me an email.
Well, that's excellent. So when your paper's out there, I mean, you're setting a best practice, and it seems to be working. So, I mean, this is a model that other states and cities and counties can look at.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, and they have.
Yep.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for being
here. Thanks,
Sam. I've learned something about St. Louis. I have friends in Missouri, so it's nice to know they're well protected.
They are.
And they're in St. Louis, isn't it?
St. Louis County, we believe, is the best protected county in the country because of the coverage for closed pods.
Well, I may just have to move.
So if you're out there and you want to have an anthrax attack on somebody, don't go to St. Louis County. Go somewhere else.
Yeah, please don't.
Well, it wouldn't do you any good because they...
That's right. Useless.
They got it covered, so... Yeah. Thank you so much for being here.
Right, Sam,
I'm really glad. I really hope people do follow your model.
Thank you very much.
It sounds like it's just a win-win for everybody. So. Okay.
So open pods and closed pods, and lots of lessons learned. And like you said, we're both gaining so much knowledge from checking out these segments and learning from these experts at the Preparedness Summit. We want to thank NACHO for bringing us in, the National Association of County and City Health Officials, for having us down here to the Preparedness Summit, setting up our podcast studio and interviewing all these experts. Anything, Sam, that stood out for you at the conference so far?
Just this wealth of information, and I think all of our listeners, they would be wise, and we're not only talking about our EMS folks that listen, but certainly people in public health or people in the public that want to learn something about what would actually happen in a disaster, and we're going to learn a lot of, I feel a great measure of comfort in knowing all of these processes are out there, and there will be top efficiency when it does happen, because especially most of the big cities are really got this nailed.
And, you know, it's all about education and training and getting those drills lined up like the pod exercise. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we can't forget to thank our supporters and our partners in this, the Paragon Medical Education Group, who are just some of the premier educators in bringing that unique educational experience to things like active shooter drills, to their cadaver labs they bring to different conferences, where
people
medical professionals
that,
can really dig into the material and experience the educational opportunity in a different way.
And we missed them. We missed you guys. So we hope that you're able to listen to all of the episodes, too, and
catch
up with you.
Check out ParagonMedicalGroup.com, and you can also find them on Twitter and Facebook as well. So look them up, and we want to thank Joe and Jim and the gang at Paragon Medical Education Group for supporting us and the Disaster Podcast. So we can bring this and events like this to you all out there. So that's fantastic. Sam, you know, we can find us at DisasterPodcast.com.
Yes, we can.
But where can folks find you?
Pretty much around the podosphere as Sam Bradley, Twitter Sam Bradley 11, Facebook Sam Bradley. It's pretty simple.
Yeah, and you can find me under the handle PodMedic just about everywhere. And of course, all of my other podcasts, as well as the Disaster Podcast, are available for you over at the ProMed Network at ProMedNetwork.com. So check all of these resources out, and of course, DisasterPodcast.com, where you can leave a comment or ask questions
Please
of
do.
Our experts. Please do. And connect back with us. This is as much your show as it is our show. We want to put the information out there that's available for you. So make sure you're taking that opportunity to get back in touch with us. So leave a comment on any of the articles or episodes there, and that emails us automatically, and we'll get back to you. We always get back to everybody that checks in with us.
Right, and we'd love to know what you're interested in knowing. Disaster is such a huge subject, as we're learning this week, God knows. There's just so many pieces to it that if there's something you'd like to know, if we don't know it, we can certainly find the expert that can tell us.
Definitely. So that's it. We're going to go ahead and wrap up here. Sam, you want to take us out?
Well, the one thing we we learn about disaster medicine is it's not everyday medicine, but we've also learned that disaster preparedness is everyone's business.